dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Matt Combs.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to another great week. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show, and I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and you may noticed in the intro there a little bit of a name change on our sponsorship as the great people in at Triple Crown. Over the last year, I've told you about some different things they're wanting to do, and they're really starting to get some of those things underway. You'll definitely want to get out there to Bridge Street in Chillicothe and check that out. Great sponsorship. You also notice the new logo on the front of our website, which of course is svcsportzone.com. So as I look at the podcast we get going last week for season number two, a great show, great feedback. Really looking forward to this week's show. I think we have some great things to talk about, where some people had some interesting things to say. Some in favor of us, some not so in favor of myself or maybe my profession, but we'll explain a little bit of that later. Matt, I want to welcome you back to the show. My brother Matt Combs joins me all through the fall, and Matt, just wanting to get some of your feedback, as I know the feedback from the fans seemed to be really interesting. What are some of your thoughts as we get ready to go this week?
Well, I thought we had a pretty interesting show last week. We had a lot going on, a lot to talk about. And some of the things we talked about, I think, came to fruition this week, and we'll be able to follow up on those. And, you know, it's like you say, it generated some discussion, which is good. You know, that's part of this. You know, we want people to talk about SVC sports. You know, that's what we want to promote. So looking forward to getting into the show and addressing some of these things.
Well, Matt, as I said, we have an inbox this week that seems to be offensive one way or the other. Should make for some intense conversation. So fans, you'll definitely want to stick around for that throughout the show. We have volleyball action that could turn the show into a history lesson of sorts and force Matt to put on his coaching hat. We had a league's top offensive attack catching me in a bit of a premature shout Friday night. And we talked some golf, cross country, and soccer as well. So without further delay, let's get to it. Probably the most interesting thing in the inbox takes me back to an article that was released in the summer, just before the fall season had gotten underway. And as the feedback continued to come in, I tried to keep it up on the front page as long as possible. And with us using this on this week's show, you'll find this article located at the bottom of the homepage. You'll see the title runs across. Can't remember exactly the collar, but you'll notice it down there toward the bottom. And the title is Volunteering, Being Forced to Take on a Completely New Level of Generosity. And the idea of the article was for me to talk a little bit about all the things necessary for someone who wanted to volunteer as a coach at multiple levels throughout our programs for junior high school kids, even in some case little league kids, all that they had to go through. And I'm basically saying that, you know, being a teacher and a coach for as long as I have, I understand all these things, but at the same time, I understand the difficulty to go through all that and then, you know, volunteer your time and your efforts. Well, one response comes in, and it's not in total favor of what I was saying, and I thought it was pretty interesting, thought it would make for good discussion on the show this week. It says, I recently read your article, Volunteering Being Forced to Take on a Completely New Level of Generosity. I have never been able to understand teachers. You have evenings, weekends, and summers off, yet you are paid like a full year job, and you still complain about stuff. In real world jobs, certification and red tape are a part of the modern world we live in today. If people want to work with kids, they need to go through the proper channels. And I guess, you know, the human side of me, as I read that article, obviously, or excuse me, the response to the article. Not, you know, not extremely happy. I guess if this person has what he or she is saying is a real world job, they would understand that teachers are not paid all year round. They're simply paid for the time they put in, and most school systems set that up on a pay scale throughout the 26 pays. In terms of having evenings and weekends and so forth off, the first thing that comes to my mind there, I don't know that any job you clock in and just never clock out and work 24 hours without sleep or time at home with your family. But then I caught myself and I thought, you know, the irony is I can't allow myself to go down that path. The idea of the article was to draw the attention to the volunteers, and this email is doing exactly the opposite. I guess when I look at this, I always tell my kids in the classroom to play the game of life. You know, there's certain rules and there's certain guidelines you go about, and I'm smart enough to know that, yeah, maybe it is a money grab here or money grab there, or this might be a little too much here. But it was never to criticize what's in place. But I think we need to return to the core of the article and understand that the amount of time and effort volunteers put in just to become volunteers really deserves a round of applause. Matt, I know you're a teacher, coach, AD, all sorts of things in education. What's your response to this?
Well, similar to yours. I mean, the irony of it, you know, I don't know that the email really addressed the article, really. I mean, the article was really talking about how, you know, volunteers, most of which who aren't teachers, most of whom are not teachers, have to put a lot of out-of-pocket expense in to just volunteering their time. You know, this guy talks about certification and red tape being a part of the, you know, part of the job place, but that usually leads to getting paid. You know, these people are doing that simply to volunteer their time. And obviously when you're dealing with kids, you know, there has to be some protections, some BCI background checks, things like that. They're necessary. You know, we just can't have whoever working with our youth, and there has to be some, you know, some checks and balances there, so to speak. But no, I was a little amused about the email, to be honest with you. The real world statement kind of had me laughing. You know, I guess after 15 years in education, you know, I've been floating around in this fantasy land. and I got, you know, caught up in the euphoria of La La Land here and didn't realize that how good I had it. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think teachers sometimes catch that rap. So I think most of us are used to that kind of thing. But you touched on some of the things in terms of, you know, teachers, you know, we get paid for the days of service that we have. And, you know, there's not a lot of jobs, I'm guessing, out there in the real world. Really, I don't want to get too much on that because we get off base. You know, really the article was about what volunteers, most of whom are not teachers, have to go through in order to volunteer. And let's be honest with each other, some of those hoops they have to jump through are necessary, but some of them, like you said, are a way for other organizations to put a little money in their pockets too. And I think that's the unfortunate part of it. The background checks, things like that, that's necessary. The online coaching course that people have to pay, what is it, $100 or so to take? I don't even know what it is.
I think the one's $65, and then you have the other one $45 and all that. So
yeah, I mean,
there's a lot of different
that's
steps.
Where I think you get into a little bit of, you know, unnecessary costs for volunteers. But anyway, I mean, you know, like I said, everyone, we welcome all opinions. I mean, shoot, our skin is thick enough to take it. So, you know, we'd much rather have people giving their opinions, even if we don't agree with them, than not having any opinions at all. So so that's just part of it.
Absolutely. Fans, as on all topics you hear on SVC Sports Talk, we would love to know what you think. Give us a call, 740-569-3254, and let us know your take on volunteers or the process needed to volunteer. All right, moving forward, it is time to go to school as we talk history, as well as the importance of coaches handling different types of personalities. Fans, last week in our volleyball section, we talked a lot of Adena volleyball, and you can, as all the cases and something that you missed on our show, be it last year or this year, you can go to the DBK Media Service website. You can look through past shows, and you can even subscribe by simply putting your email there in the subscribe box. You'll get an email. You'll simply accept it, and then you'll get an email come to you so you're sure not to miss a release of any show basically throughout the year. Keep in mind, we're going to do 10 fall, 10 winter, and 10 spring. So as you go back to last week, you'll know that we talked a lot of Edina volleyball on Tuesday night. Westfall defeated Edina in straight sets to end streaks of 98 and 142. The 98 is the SVC straight matches, and the 142, because that was in Frankfurt, that ends the 142 straight home wins as well. And, you know, I've been reading certain things throughout the week as people report on this, the last time Edina lost at home, and I'm hearing Bill Clinton and OJ and in the sports world, you know, Michael Jordan, we're getting used to him wearing number 45 there for a spurt. And I was joking the other day with someone at lunch. I said, the last time Edina lost at home, I weighed less than 200 pounds, and they were making fun of me because as I was saying it, I was eating a lunch that totaled about over 1,000 calories. And, you know, Matt, I guess when you think back to that far, you know, if you were to look at something personally, I know you won't talk about this, but as I was thinking about, you know, you and your coaching career getting started, you're getting ready to knock on the door of 200 career wins. If I'm not mistaken, when this whole thing started, you hadn't even had a head coaching position given to you yet.
Yeah, that's true. And I just a comment on your lunch. I don't know that, you know, your lunch hasn't really changed over the years. I think your metabolism has, but you know, you know, that sounds very similar to the lunch you would eat back when.
Well, anyone who sees my lovely physique today would know that 200 pounds was many, many years ago.
Oh, I hear you. I tell you, the thing about Edina's streak, I think it's obviously anytime you have a streak like that, it's impressive on several different levels. Because you're dealing with so many different groups of kids that had to contribute to that. I mean, I wouldn't even begin to guess how many different players contributed to that type of streak over the years. And then, you know, just to be able to do that with that bullseye on your back, because the longer a streak goes, and let's face it, all streaks made to be broken. You know, I mean, eventually it's going to come to an end, or otherwise, you know, it wouldn't be worth talking about. But you know, just to be able to keep that consistency year after year after year, knowing that you are the biggest game on everybody's schedule in your league, you know, and every time you go out there, chances are you're not catching another team's off night, so to speak, because they're really excited about the opportunity to maybe be the team that knocks you off, you know, and to be able to answer that bell with high school kids, many different groups of high school kids, that's always impressive. I know, you know, we were a part in our basketball program of a pretty long streak in our league that span over a few years. And the longer that goes, you know, the pressure builds, I think, in the kids' eyes a little bit. I don't know how much coaches really think about it because we're just looking at each year individually. But the kids, I think, look at it and say, man, we don't want to be that group. You know, we don't want to. We talked a little bit about that last week with the pressure that goes along with it. So, you know, again, it's going to come to an end at some point. It's not like it's devastating to Edina. It's not like it ends their season. You know, they still control their own destiny in this thing. They're still going to go play and have as good a chance as anybody to win this league championship. But yeah, I mean, it comes to an end, and it's an impressive thing to talk about. But that's, you know, like I said, streaks are made to be broken. So that's just the way it goes.
Well, fans, you know, one of our great sponsors, Dr. Chris Good, you'll want to check out the Good Health Chiropractic Center SVC Volleyball Scoreboard. We definitely continue to celebrate that great streak later in the show. But, you know, as in terms of the volleyball section this week, we also need to be giving credit to Westfall. Westfall obviously goes on the road, gets it done in straight sets, and really starts what ends up being a really interesting first week in volleyball. As we move forward, it does appear to be a five-team race. Coach Lido and her Lady Mustangs playing at home two nights later. They welcome Zane Trace, and Zane Trace beats Westfall in four. I know I was over at Huntington. Huntington goes up 2-1 on Edina, but the Warriors come back to win it in an incredible five-set thriller. And talking to Edina head coach Laura Smith following Thursday match, I first asked her about her team losing on Tuesday and then trailing 2-1 to Huntington.
Coach, coming off the other night and then down 2-1 the night on the road, you have to just be so proud of your kids and just how hard they competed.
Well, and we played hard Tuesday night too, but came up short. And we've got a lot of young kids on the court, and it's going to be that way until things can get consistent in their minds, and they're not used to playing a more power, quicker offense and defense. They're just not ready yet, and it's coming along as good as it can, and they're working hard in practice, and we just have to keep pushing them.
Well, like in every matchup, I mean, teams are going to have certain rotations they're more comfortable than others. Obviously, when Jackie Kelly's across the front for them, they're really a talented team. And what are some of the things at the net with their size that you liked about the final two sets that maybe you weren't getting done in sets two and three?
What we were doing?
Yeah.
Well, I thought we started attacking the ball, and we started controlling things a little bit too. And I thought we started passing the ball and making better plays on defense.
The last thing, I was getting some updates throughout the evening here. Paint Valley ended up winning a set against Southeastern. Piketon won a set against Uniode, and Zane Trace beat Westfall 3-1. Just what's your take on the craziness of the SVC early on here?
Well, it's going to be that way, I think. There's a lot of young teams, and Paint Valley with a new coach, a different system possibly, that takes some getting used to, and they've got a lot of kids on their roster, I think, that weren't there last year, and Uniode is very young as well, and I think it's going to be that way. So you have to be so much on your guard. But really, for us, I'm just tickled to death that we're able to come out of here with a win, because we're going to have to play hard like that every time we go on the court. It's because things are going to go wrong that we're not accustomed to seeing go wrong just because of youthful mistakes. But
very exciting tonight. I thought both teams played hard, and congratulations on getting out of here with a win.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, appreciate Coach Smith taking some time before getting on the bus there. Again, her team facing a deficit of 2-1, come back to win in 5. And as I try to sort the week out with Westfall beating Edina and Zane Trace beating Westfall and Edina beating Huntington and Uniode and Zane Trace both now 2-0 in league play, they play Tuesday. As I was saying last week, we're going to know within about the first eight or nine days of the season here where everybody stands. But I also look Westfall, Huntington, and Zane Trace, Edina. Now, those were the preview matchups, so they're going to be played last in the round. So it's kind of a wide open 5-team race, and as I start to break down those rosters, it's really unique, the different personalities. When I look at Uniode, I see a group of sophomores have that little arrogance to them, that confidence that, you know, I think all young teams have that. They're not really experienced, but at the same time, they're very confident in their ability, and sometimes they'll play with that little chip on their shoulder. And then Huntington and Westfall, very star-driven, and those coaches looking to get more and more out of their role players, and they're really coming on. And talking to those two coaches, I think that they're excited about the improvement of some of the kids that maybe weren't on everybody's radar to start. And Zane Trace, incredible balance as you look at their kill total, led by Carl, but they're still getting great kill totals from the other hitters, Strauss Ball, Spetnagel, Chafin, both setters, Pontius and Tillis, getting a nice mixture of assist totals throughout all of their matches. And then obviously Edina, the great tradition, and their skill level is so good. Obviously they've lost some pieces for things that we talked about last week, but this is still a very, very skilled volleyball team. So, Matt, what I wanted you to do is put on your coaching hat for a second and talk to us year in, year out, as we get a lot of these coaches, some that have been in programs a long time, some taking on new programs, maybe just now into their second year. What are some of the things that the challenges that coaches face when you try to be true to yourself and true to what you want your program to stand for, but at the same time at the high school level, trying to get the best out of that particular team?
Well, I've always said, I think, you know, the trick to being successful at the high school level is you have to be flexible in your style and stubborn in your values, your core values of your team. I think, in other words, you know, you have to have things you believe in and things that your program is going to be centered around in terms of how you practice, how you conduct yourselves, how you travel to games, how you build your team, you know, how you do team building activities, whatever, you know, the case may be. All those things, regardless of who you coach or how good of a player you coach, has to be, this is the way it's going to be. Team rules, team expectations, all those things. But in terms of style, you have to be flexible because you're going to have different types of players over the course of the long haul, you know. In Laura Smith's case, you know, I doubt she had the same exact type of player for 20 years, you know what I mean, during,
right.
You know, during the time she's dominated. And so, you know, you have to adjust to the talent level that you have. I'm not a smart enough volleyball guy to necessarily give you an analogy, but if it were basketball, you know, there's going to be times you're quick and you want to run and press. There's going to be times you're big and slow and you want to play slower and more powerful. You have to be flexible, because if you get locked into one style of play, inevitably you're going to get a group of kids that doesn't fit that style. Right. So you have to be flexible in your style, but stubborn in your beliefs and your expectations and your core values of your program.
Well, I tell you what, fans, you need to check out our Embroid Me schedules. Embroid Me here in Chillicothe, 774-7400 for all your SVC apparel needs. Great people in there in town. They'll take care of you. And as I look at the schedules, it's going to be fun to watch. Really look forward to covering it. Fans, make sure to stay with us. On the other side of the break, I will tell you why this is a must-play well week for SVC golfers, and we will talk about the up-and-coming soccer programs as well as a pair of cross-country programs continuing to do what they do, which is win. Well, in last week's golf coverage, I know, Matt, we were talking about who we thought might be in second place. And I tell you, this week was more of the same, as I noticed Adina 17, Westfall 16, Zane Trace 16, and even Southeastern starting to stick their nose in there at 12. And this week, I really expect the scoring to be as good as it's going to get. And when I say must play well week for SVC golfers, what I'm talking about is this week they go to River's Edge. And for those of you in the Chillicothe or SVC area that do not know, that's the Running Fox golf course that's called River's Edge now. And historically, the scoring's been really good here. Now, obviously, throughout the league, as we've documented, some of the scoring's been down throughout the year. But I think this is an opportunity for these teams that are 2 through 5 to really separate themselves. And I think you could really see a 3 or 4 position swing here on a course like this if the right people play well. Obviously, Eli McKee a couple years back, this course really meets his eye as he went an SVC record low pace. And it's Zane Trace's home course, so obviously that should favor their 3, 4, 5, 6 men in terms of trying to produce those 3rd and 4th scores that Coach Lee Master and his group are going to need to be successful. So that's the case all the way down. Be interesting to see how that plays out. So you'll want to check the website for those results. On the soccer side, we talk Zane Trace and Uniota girls were in action. You'll see that on the website. Jenny Campbell of Uniota in a 9-1 win over Fairfield Union, 4 goals and assisted another. And on the boys' side, I wanted to make note of Southeastern soccer really starting to grow. Dylan Miles, a name you'll know from our kicking discussion with the Southeastern Panthers, he's a soccer player as well. He scores 5 goals as Southeastern beats Westfall 9-4. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure Mr. Simmons told me Westfall is a club sport that's still trying to grow a little bit. You know, we're going to talk soccer a little bit more in our 2-minute drill later on. And then on the cross country side, Zane Trace girls and Uniota boys continuing to have great success. I know Jesse Prohl won an individual title for the Zane Trace girls. You also notice the Uniota girls much improved and as good a team as they've had in quite some time there. And then you want to check out the website on the cross country link, because there was 5 SVC teams in action up at Circleville the other day, so you'll be able to look and keep in mind that's middle school too, so you'll be able to get some of the middle school results, as we always try our best to give the junior high results. So fans, if you're looking for golf, soccer, cross country, football, volleyball, whatever it is, look over on the left side of the homepage, svcsportzone.com. simply look for the icon or the picture of your favorite sport, click on it. That'll take you to a page, it'll tell you everything you want to know throughout the week, and you can scroll down to see really throughout the entire year. Now, fans don't go away. On the other side of the break, we talk football, as we had great feedback on the kicking game discussion, and I need to apologize to Trent Williamson and the incredible Westfall offense. Last week we had a great talk on the kicking game, and as I was going through the inbox, and again, inbox admin1 at svcsportzone.com, and then we also had a Facebook message. I want to let fans know there's two ways to get with me on Facebook. I'm Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, but you can also just simply click the Like Us button on the website, and svcsportzone.com has the individual Facebook page as well. So definitely had feedback on both of those pages this week on various topics, so enjoy getting the opportunity to talk to you there. One email says, hey, just now getting around to listening to this week's show. This was coming in late last week, talking about show number one here of the fall season. I totally agree with you guys on kicking game. A good kicker can make a team, regardless of their talent, a game or two better per year. Already this year, we have had a few games where the kicking game has been the difference between winning and losing. Obviously, I agree with that particular thing. I think we all agree it's important. I think the debate here, as we get into it again, I think the debate looking from last week to this week isn't necessarily the skill being a simple one to teach. I think it's the focus on it and the time put into it and understanding the importance. One Facebook message to Shane Combs, SVC Sports Zone, it says, even though I was entertained by the kicking conversation on this week's show, I think you guys do not understand everything that goes into the kicking game. Oftentimes, the skill is snapping the ball consistently under pressure to a small window, and having a holder with the hands and skill to put it down are hard to find in high school. And I guess, Matt, my take to this, and then I'm going to get yours as well. I think it goes back to I've never accused the skills of being easy. I think it's unlike any other sport. I don't think you can compare this to a catcher in baseball or a point guard in basketball or a setter in volleyball, because those are obviously important positions. This is such a unique position in a particular sport that – I question if enough time is being put into it at the younger levels and as we get up through. In the weeks to come, I hope to have some special team coordinators and some schools that have had success in the kicking game and maybe seeing what they do. But as you see some of the feedback there, as we're into week two of this discussion, what are some of your responses?
Well, I can't disagree with that last statement there, our Facebook message. I don't think there's any question that it's a difficult deal in high school to get the snap and the hold and the place and placement and everything like that. You know, a lot goes in. There's several moving parts there, so to speak, you know what I mean, in terms of kicking a field goal or even an extra point, obviously. But but I was talking also a little bit more on last week's show, not just of the field goal extra point scenario, but also just kicking off the field position thing, you know, because there's a little less that goes into it there. Obviously, the ball's setting on a tee. You're not, you know what I mean? You're not involving a snap and a hold and all that. And we still see a lot of poor even kickoffs in terms of trying to get field position. And I know you can make the argument, well, maybe kickoff coverage isn't as good. But in terms of just how deep people kick off and how I think some teams are just, you know, when they don't have a good kicker, they just, you know, and I guess you have to take another approach. You see a lot of squib kicks in high school, at least I have recently, because they're just, you know, they're trying to fight that, not having a kid with a good leg that can kick the ball down the field and maybe set up better field position for your defense or whatever. Same being true with the punting game. So, you know, I guess I was also talking a little bit more of that end of it, but yeah, I can't disagree that there's a lot of things that go in terms of kicking the field goal, especially.
Matt, we had a little bit more feedback, and then it'll give us a chance to respond a little bit more and maybe talk. I think you make a great point there on the kickoff. We had one response on the phone call this week, and again, that's the 569-3254 number. It comes from a person who kicks them in high school and has done some coaching at the high school level as well.
I was really enjoying your topic conversation about the kicking game last week on the SBC Sports Zone podcast, and as a former kicker and high school football coach, I kind of wanted to maybe share some perspective and get your guys' opinion on some things. In the junior high football game, they take the kicking part of the game out of it, so that's not really introduced until the varsity level. And so as when I became a kicker, you really don't really get into that everyday grind practice until you're a freshman or sophomore. Even after that said, by the time I was a junior or senior, I would say that I was probably a 70-75% kicker from inside 35 yards. So a point to bring up is, you know, you have those phantom yards, the 17 yards, the 10 yards for the end zone, the 7 yards for the hold. So you had to be, to get in my range, we had to get to the 18-yard line or better. So if the situation called for it, it'd be fourth down inside the 20 before we'd even have a realistic shot. So when you factor in those things, the coach has to look at his script and go, well, fourth down and 3, be 75% from there, and that's not even counting the guy with the hold and a correct snap. So just a kind of a topic for you guys to think about and discuss. Looking forward to hearing it. Thanks.
Well, Matt, I think there's definitely some things there that make sense. I think as a coach, a lot of times you are looking at that 4-3, you know, 4th and 4, depending on where you're at on the field. But I think there's also a lot of times where I could see where, especially in the day of the spread offense, where people want to be a little bit more aggressive and go. But I think there's just time and score situations when you get down to, say, even the 5-yard line, and it's 4th and goal from the 5, and you're up, say, 6 points, and there's 8 minutes to go. Kicking a field goal can make it a 2-possession game, and some people don't have that option. I think he made a great point about the junior high. I think this is something that programs almost would have to do a little bit on their own, just seeing the importance of it. And again, I don't know at what age kids are capable of starting to kick it. I do want to go back to one of your points, Matt, and then I want you to kind of respond to the phone call and to this. In the day of the spread offense, not having someone that can kick the ball deep, if you're just squib kicking and you're giving teams the ball at the 30, 35, 40, you're really almost at the mercy of playing 4-down defense and trying to stop the Trent Williamsons and the Isaac Brapsons and the Bryce Vickers from getting 10 yards on 4 plays, are you not?
Yeah, I think so. And I tell you, that was a great phone call. I'm not sure who that was, but that was one of the better phone calls we've had in terms of really laying out his argument for it. Because I think you know, that, like you said, not having it in junior high is a big deal. I mean, can you imagine in another sport you just totally take away a skill in the 7th and 8th grade and then you expect kids to be able to do it when they get to high school? That makes it very difficult, I think, on coaches. And in terms of, you know, talking about, you know, the 4th down situations and deep in the other team's territory, you know, I was at a game the other night. It was Piketon, Vinton County. Obviously, I'm at most Vinton County games. Got a chance to see 2 SVC teams play last 2 weeks in Uniota and Piketon. But in that particular game that ended up being, I think, a 26-12 game, you know, Vinton County had the ball down close 2 different times. One time I'm pretty sure was inside the 10. The other time I want to say was inside the 10, probably at least inside the 15. And both of those drives stalled on downs. You know, if they have the ability there to kick a field goal, it's, you know, you've got it to a 1-possession game late. You know, I think that's what you were talking about. I think if it's 4th and 2, 4th and 3, the odds are probably with you in high school to go ahead and go for it. But it's when you get that 4th and 8, 4th and 9, or 4th and goal from the 10 or 11 because maybe you've had a penalty or a loss of yardage or whatever. That's when the field goal would come in handy. But yeah, great call there, because I think he opened up a lot of things you have to think about.
again, fans, you can get involved so many different ways. We've mentioned the email with a Facebook, the phone call, all that information there on the website. So again, please get involved, not just on the kicking game discussion. As we move forward in the weeks to come, we hope to hear from some soccer coaches. We hope to hear from some special teams coaches in football. So I think this is going to be a debate that continues to go on. It's been a really interesting one. As we turn our attention now to the football field itself, most of you know I've been doing a Shout-O-Matic feature, and basically what that is where I call in to this voice system that we have for SVCSportsZone.com, and I leave you shouts of updates that are happening. Tuesday, Thursday night, I did it for volleyball. Friday nights, I do it for football, and all you do is simply save that particular link to your phone or your computer on your internet. And every time I release one, you can follow that through Twitter, SVC Sports Zone, or you can get it on the Facebooks that I mentioned earlier. And that's a great way to follow all the action. Well, I'm leaving my shouts on Friday night, and I probably went 12, 13, 14, 15 deep. And as I get to the end of the night, I was telling fans that this would probably be the final shout. And I would said that we'd had four winners and four, it looked like we were going to have four teams that fall. Well, come to find out, I'd had the time a little wrong on the Westfall game, but I didn't think much of it. Well, as updates continued to come in, sure enough, what was a 27-12 deficit, Trent Williamson and Staten and those crazy athletes on the offensive side for Coach Keller and his Westfall Mustangs, they score 16 unanswered, and they win at 28-27 over Logan Elm for just an incredible win. So my apologies to Trent Williamson and that offense. You'd think I would learn after watching that offense take the field now for what's been 3 years that you always wait for the clock to read zero before you count them out. Other news, Paint Valley and Piketon and goes to 2-0, very winnable games, capable of getting the 3-0. And I guess the other thing, Matt, is the playoff picture. I know it seems early, but with the way our league sets up, playing the seven league games, this week three could be really pivotal in terms of playoff. Obviously, getting Piketon and Paint Valley to 3-0. Anytime Westfall gets a chance to play a bigger school, I think Zane Trace at 0-2. Extremely important against a bigger school. I say bigger school compared to most SVC schools in McLean, because we have not beaten McLean in these first 2 weeks. So that's a chance there for maybe Zane Trace to get in the win column and pick up. I know, Matt, you've seen, I believe, three teams play in person counting the preseason, and you've talked to a few other people about some other teams. What is your take on SVC football at this point?
Yeah, like you say, I've seen Huntington in a preseason game. I've seen Uniode and Piketon in a regular season game. I tell you, haven't seen Westfall. Obviously, you know, they always have to be dealt with in the league, so to speak, with the talent they have. And Coach Keller does a good job there. And sounds like Paint Valley's off to a good start. I was really impressed with Piketon the other night, to be completely honest with you. I was just really impressed overall with the way they handled themselves. I mean, when they got off the bus, from the time they got off the bus to the time they got back on the bus, they were on a business trip. You know what I mean? You could tell that they were there to do a job. You know, everybody from the coaching staff on down was very, you know, very tunnel vision, very focused on what they had to do. I think Coach Gallion does a great job with them. And I thought, you know, they have such good skilled people. You know, they have the quick running back, and they have the powerful running back with Royster and Waddell.
Yes.
They have the really good quarterback, obviously, in Braps, and they have the two receivers. You know, the Williams, I believe, is a big, strong kid. I mean, at times they just threw the ball up in the air and he just went and got it. I mean, yeah. It just looked like a big kid taking it from a little kid at times, and they just had really good balance. I don't know the stats, but I'm betting you that it was about 50-50 run pass. You know, Vinton County actually played pretty solid to keep the game where it was. I mean, Piketon had some drives that stalled. They shot themselves in the foot a couple times with maybe I think they had a fumble once late down when they were driving to score an additional touchdown. I think they had a kind of a miscommunication maybe on a fourth down play once for an incompletion. They had some chances to put some more points on the board, but I'll tell you, with their skill people, and then they've got some absolute monsters on the defensive front too. You know, I apologize for not knowing all the names, but there's a couple kids up front there that really bring the heat defensively. So I like what Piketon has to offer, and I think they play Westfall pretty early, don't they, Shane?
Yeah, for week four, I believe it is.
Yeah, so that ought to be pretty interesting. I really like those two teams. I haven't seen Westfall yet. Obviously, they have a lot of talent, but I really liked what I saw in Piketon.
Well, I know from talking to you, you really like Piketon. Huntington, I know, gets a huge win down at Manchester to get rid of the long losing streak there. And I know they are setting their sights on making sure that's not the only time they visit the win column this year. And I appreciate the footage that was sent to me on Facebook, as they had a real nice scene where they brought the bus back and brought them up with the lights on there and had a chance to ring the victory bell. Really good for Coach Bartholomew and those kids. Paint Valley really, really playing good football, good defense, good special teams as always. Cottonbrook on offense is really putting some huge rushing numbers up early. Yeah, a lot of things moving forward to be exciting. It should be an exciting week three. And then as we get into league play, we'll start to take a look at some of our predictions starting next week in our two-minute drill. And speaking of the two-minute drill, Matt, people who followed us in the first year of the show, they'll know that the two-minute drill is where we take some rapid-fire type of questions. In basketball, we call it the fast break, baseball, extra innings, track, photo finish, and so on. But again, the two-minute drill is designed to take on some quick style questions, and this is brought to you by C&K Athletic Equipment. Check their ad out on our website for all their details. They do a real nice job in getting coaches squared away for their upcoming season. And this week, we talk a little of all sports.
Recent conversations have posed the question of SVC Golf moving from a six-man lineup for each team to playing with five. Which would you prefer?
Well, Shane, I know the argument, I guess, for and against this, and I don't know which side of this you're on, but I for me, you know, the six-man rotation or six-man lineup, I guess, it just allows more kids to be involved, and I'm for that. You know, I just, if it gives a kid a chance to play varsity golf that maybe otherwise wouldn't, why not? I think in terms of winning the league, the cream's going to rise to the top anyway, so to speak, so I'm okay with the six.
Matt, I have to disagree with you here a little bit. I think there'd be a lot of benefits to going to five. First of all, in the tournament, teams play five, and I think that could help get them ready for that. I think a five-man rotation could bring more balance to our league. You've heard me talk about some of the enrollment figures over the years and different things. It's going to be a lot easier for teams to figure out how to get third player and then that fourth needed score to compete if they're not getting some of the bigger schools who are putting that really good six man out there. And as far as cheating kids out of the opportunity to play, I think with the growth of junior high golf, I think you could really start to develop a JV league. I mean, if you have five varsity, five JV, you're only talking 10 high school golfers. I think the majority of the schools would be confident that they could get to at least eight golfers to field the two separate teams if needed. But I think there's a lot of benefit for the league to go to the five man.
The sport of soccer continues to grow in the SVC. Is this good or bad for the league?
Well, not to act like I'm stuck on this the more the merrier theme, but I think it's good. I mean, anytime you give kids more options of what they can do with their time, and from an extracurricular standpoint, I think it's a good thing. So the more sports a school has to offer, the more kids that are involved in that, you know, why not? I know some people are going to say, well, it, you know, you stretch yourself thin. It hurts some of your other sports. Well, who's to say what the most important sport is to begin with? And you know, in terms of, say, football, you can find a lot of bad football programs that don't have soccer. So I'm not sure that correlation, you know, sticks every time. So I'm for the growth of it.
I guess I'm in the middle a little bit here because I understand having the sport is great for kids. Obviously, soccer is catching on across a lot of SVC schools, so that's obviously a good thing if they're getting a chance to play. But you can't talk SVC sports without at least being open-minded to the numbers of enrollment in terms across the schools. You just can't do it. And for the longest time, some of our bigger schools have had soccer, and it's maybe even some things out through the major sports. I think you have to be really, really careful if you start to take on too many things that enrollment's going to start to raise its ugly head again.
Looking at the Embrightme schedules, which football game in week three is most important and why?
Well, it's the last week of non-league play, so, I guess if you talk to coaches, they're all important. But I think you mentioned a couple of them earlier, Shane, with Paint Valley and Piketon both trying to get to 3-0. You've got Zane Trace trying to get a win on the board against a team that two other, teams have failed to beat. But I'll go with Piketon. I think Piketon, they got the win against Fenton County the other night. I don't think, and I don't want to put words in Coach Galling's mouth, that they played necessarily as well as he would have liked at times. So they're going to go play a Minford team who's capable, and for what they're probably hoping to accomplish this year with playoffs or league championship or both, that's a big game for them.
This one's tough, Matt. I all the things you just said are right on. Anytime you get to 2-1, 3-0, and then if you're able to go 5-2 in SVC play, the playoffs are right there as a possibility. I'm going to kind of go a different route here, and I'm going to say Huntington. You look at what they've done over the years with the losing streak, and last year I thought they really showed improvement in their product, and now they get that first win. Last week they have another really winnable home game. I think if they're able to get to 2-1, I think it could lead to a 3 or 4 win season. I think this is a really pivotal Friday night. We talked trap game in volleyball earlier. I think in football, getting those kids to taste winning and still get to work this week and be ready to go Friday night. I'm gonna say Huntington as they host Northwest.
With all the parity in SVC volleyball, how many losses when it's all said and done will the eventual conference champion have on their record?
Well, this one's tough. I know you could look at several different angles of this. There's a lot of parity, so you could say, oh, well, man, maybe even 3 losses or whatever. But you could also make the argument that someone might get it together and only lose one. But I think that 2 seems likely in a league with this much parity. But, I guess being the risk taker that I am, I'm going to go out on a limb and say 1. I have a gut feeling that maybe somebody's going to get through this league and get it together quicker than somebody else and maybe get through it with only 1 loss.
Well, Matt, I've been on record in the preseason saying if it gets to 3, I would be shocked. Maybe 3 could still get you a share. I really feel like 2 is the number. I wouldn't rule out the 1, as you said, but if I had to pick a number now, I really think 2 could get you an outright title. I think if it goes to 3, a share is about as good as you're going to do. So I'd say 2 would be my answer to that question. Fans, Matt and I always enjoy hearing from you. We truly mean it. And this week we really mean this because the inbox with the kicking game and the different things going on, we've had so many things. We're so sorry we can't get to all of them, but we do read them all and we do use them all to decide our agenda. I don't want to forget about the people at SEO Preps, SEO NEK Preps. Even the Muskingum Valley League Forum is starting to get involved with our show. We've had some comments from there. Really appreciate those people if you're listening over there to the east. And then JJ Huddle always does a great job. They have our media link up, plus throughout the forums there's some discussion. As always, we try to fit in one more inbox, and we're running a little short on time, but I think this is a great question, and we want to get it in. It says, Shane, in your headline for Westfall Dean, a volleyball game, I noticed the SVC Streaks page. It was interesting to compare the different sports, not counting Adina, because this email says obviously it's the most incredible. Which streak do you think is the most impressive and why? And I guess, Matt, as I go first and then we'll let you quickly go, I wanted to say the basketball with Southeastern boys, Westfall girls, and again you can check this page out on the website. But it's hard for me, knowing the nature of baseball, not to be real impressed with that Uniota streak. But man, I don't want to not give credit to the Southeastern boys and Westfall girls as well, and girls basketball. What's your opinion on that page?
Well, I know it'd make for better entertainment if I could disagree with you. But to be honest with you on this one, I feel the same way. Baseball is just not a sport where you should dominate. I mean, let's face it, you watch baseball. And in Major League Baseball, if you win 60% of your games, you'll probably make the playoffs, And it's just not a sport where you typically dominate, because all it takes is one good pitching performance on a given night, or the ball doesn't bounce your way. I don't have to tell you that. I mean, you coach baseball, but to be able to win that amount of games in a row and not trip up somewhere in a sport like baseball – is very impressive, especially if, and I'm not going to go through it right now, but if anybody gets on Facebook and reads, I think it was Eric Cox's comments, he listed some players that played in the league during that time, some guys that went on to have great college or even get drafted into professional ranks that Uniota had to go against. So it's not like the league was weak every year. You know, there was good teams in there.
Absolutely.
And yeah. So that streak was very impressive.
Well, throughout the show, Matt, I've let people know a couple different ways on Facebook, the inbox, Twitter, the phone number. Fans, please get involved. We have so much going on. Check out that streaks page on the website. The link's located just towards the top, right in the middle of the page. Love to hear your feedback on that as we get ready for our third show next week. So until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for DBK Media Services, and for my co-host, Matt Combs. This is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.